Cambridge English, Proficiency 2. Published by Cambridge University Press and Cambridge English Language Assessment 2015. This recording is copyright. CD 2.
This is the Cambridge English Proficiency Test 3. I am going to give you the instructions for this test. I shall introduce each part of the test and give you time to look at the questions. At the start of each piece, you will hear this sound. You will hear each piece twice. Remember, while you are listening, write your answers on the question paper. You will have 5 minutes at the end of the test to copy your answers onto the separate answer sheet. There will now be a pause. Please ask any questions now, because you must not speak during the test. Now open your question paper and look at part one. You will hear three different extracts. For questions 1 to 6, choose the answer A, B or C, which fits best according to what you hear. There are 2 questions for each extract. Extract 1.
Am I supposed to start worrying about hedgehogs because their numbers are decreasing here in Britain? I don't know how they know this. It's like the estimate of the number of cats in the USA. I recall someone commenting that the man who counted the cats had a terrible time and said he wouldn't want to do it again. But whether the hedgehogs matter? I only knew one personally. It showed up in our garden and had to be repatriated to the local park in a cat basket. It left an uncounted number of fleas in it, which I don't suppose are an endangered species. I know we worry about badgers and the cattle that they may or may not contaminate, and about declining coral creatures and famished polar bears. But how many things are we supposed to take sides on? Do we have to worry about things we can't affect? Take the plans to close my local hospital. Do politicians and business leaders really notice what the public think about things like this and act accordingly? Well, maybe. Sometimes. There's a case for selective indignation, but I'm not convinced about the hedgehogs. Am I supposed to start worrying about hedgehogs because their numbers are decreasing here in Britain? I don't know how they know this. It's like the estimate of the number of cats in the USA. I recall someone commenting that the man who counted the cats had a terrible time and said he wouldn't want to do it again. But whether the hedgehogs matter? I only knew one personally. It showed up in our garden and had to be repatriated to the local park in a cat basket. It left an uncounted number of fleas in it, which I don't suppose are an endangered species. I know we worry about badgers and the cattle that they may or may not contaminate, and about declining coral creatures and famished polar bears. But how many things are we supposed to take sides on? Do we have to worry about things we can't affect? Take the plans to close my local hospital. Do politicians and business leaders really notice what the public think about things like this and act accordingly? Well, maybe. Sometimes. There's a case for selective indignation, but I'm not convinced about the hedgehogs.
Extract 2.
I always imagine life's goals as skyscrapers. The vast majority of people compete against each other trying to climb the stairs or cram into the elevators, but the fastest way to get to the top floor of a skyscraper isn't to climb the stairs or squeeze into the elevators. No. The fastest way to get onto the top floor of a skyscraper is to parachute down onto it from above. It's about thinking big. Because here's the funny thing. When you shoot higher, you actually encounter less competition along the way, not more. Don't get me wrong, I'm not a proponent of blind optimism. I'm actually a bit of a pessimist myself. But statistically, very few people shoot for massive goals. Everyone wants to be realistic. Well, there's some fascinating research around this topic, and it turns out that shooting for the massive goals isn't such a bad idea after all. I always imagine life's goals as skyscrapers. The vast majority of people compete against each other trying to climb the stairs or cram into the elevators, but the fastest way to get to the top floor of a skyscraper isn't to climb the stairs or squeeze into the elevators. No. The fastest way to get onto the top floor of a skyscraper is to parachute down onto it from above. It's about thinking big. Because here's the funny thing. When you shoot higher, you actually encounter less competition along the way, not more. Don't get me wrong, I'm not a proponent of blind optimism. I'm actually a bit of a pessimist myself. But statistically, very few people shoot for massive goals. Everyone wants to be realistic. Well, there's some fascinating research around this topic, and it turns out that shooting for the massive goals isn't such a bad idea after all.
Extract 3.
How would you say you're different from other publishers?
I've published work that may have taken a long time to get through more traditional companies, where an editor didn't see its potential or wasn't prepared to go out on a limb. The industry tends to get stuck in a rut. We published a novel recently by a Swedish writer. She'd been to a few other publishers with it, and they're all a bit concerned because it was actually quite quirky, and they're expecting some sort of dark, realistic Nordic crime novel. But we were prepared to accept that wasn't where she was going.
Do you think there's a classic editor type?
In capitalist economies, there are market forces. People tend to go with trends. So when successful authors like J.K. Rowling and Dan Brown came onto the scene, editors were out looking for their clones. But we're talking big publishers here. When you look at small presses, they do interesting work regardless of who the editors are, because they don't have the same pressures. It's just that when companies get to a certain size and have shareholders, then they change.
How would you say you're different from other publishers?
I've published work that may have taken a long time to get through more traditional companies, where an editor didn't see its potential or wasn't prepared to go out on a limb. The industry tends to get stuck in a rut. We published a novel recently by a Swedish writer. She'd been to a few other publishers with it, and they're all a bit concerned because it was actually quite quirky, and they're expecting some sort of dark, realistic Nordic crime novel. But we were prepared to accept that wasn't where she was going.
Do you think there's a classic editor type?
In capitalist economies, there are market forces. People tend to go with trends. So when successful authors like J.K. Rowling and Dan Brown came onto the scene, editors were out looking for their clones. But we're talking big publishers here. When you look at small presses, they do interesting work regardless of who the editors are, because they don't have the same pressures. It's just that when companies get to a certain size and have shareholders, then they change.
That is the end of part 1.